Blog Talk Radio.
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Bowling Green, EO11, EO11. It's all a state of mind, whether or not you find that place down there or heaven. In the meantime, EO, EO, EO 11, EO 11, EO 11. Show me a man without a dream, and I'll show you a man that's dead, real dead. Once I had me a dream, but that dream got kicked in the head, dream dead. I nearly had me that chauffeur and that block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. I nearly had me that penthouse, all them stacks of Bowling Green, E11, 11. Some judge is gonna say I'm putting you away for 84 years and 7. In the meantime, EO 11, 11.
Ooh, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-
You know, I really don't even know what to say after that. Hey, everybody, James Bostic here. A conservative's perspective on the you thought I forgot, didn't you? On the Patriot Nation Radio Network, Patriot Nation Radio. If you're not listening, you should be. This is some of the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. PatriotNation.com. All right. It's good to be back. I haven't done this in a long time. Live radio, that is. Tiny little bit of feedback there, but I think everything's okay now. How in the heck are you, man? It's good to be here. A bit of a hiatus, yeah, you could say that. You could say that. But we're not going to. Yeah, I have been gone a long time, and it's awesome to get back. I had a really, really uplifting conversation with a very, very good friend of mine last week. Fellow podcaster, fellow radio. He's in a different level, man. He's in the stratosphere. Gary Benford, of course, is who I'm talking about from United Patriots Uprising. And we had a great conversation, and he asked when I was coming back, and I had been moving in this direction. I had been moving in this direction for a while. I just laid down, man. I don't know what else to tell you. Mom died about a year ago. She died September 3rd of last year, and, you know, there were a million questions and issues at hand to be dealt with, and my brother and I didn't really take any time off to grieve or do anything. We just kind of pressed forward. You know, sometimes that's okay and it works in some instances. Others, it doesn't really. But anyway, I'm back, baby. And we got a lot of crap to talk about, as we always do. I think what's going to happen And I'm moving back. Yes, I know you've heard me say this a million times. I'm moving into the video application, and we're going to be doing that in a limited fashion at first. But at some point, you know, I'm going to be biting the bullet. I've got a green screen. I've got most of the technology at hand to do that. Probably need a little bit higher resolution stuff, some higher definition stuff, and we're working on that too. And at some point, this radio program will, Gary, and again, just like old times, you don't see him, but I know he's here. I'm talking about, of course, Gary Benford, my good friend there, who's inboxing me right now, real time. Yeah, it was obvious. Yeah, it was great to speak with you. Absolutely, it was worth something. He is so modest, man. He's like one of the most gifted podcasters out there, and he can get A-listers that nobody else can get. And that's not lying or bragging or joking. The guy has a touch, and he's an excellent interviewer, and I think that's probably why they go back. Kevin Sorbo has been with him a few times. Lieutenant General Michael Flynn's been with him a couple of times. He lives in the stratosphere. Like Sam Cooke lived in the top 10, Gary Benford lives in the talk radio stratosphere. But anyway, we had a great conversation. He asked when I was coming back, and I was moving in that direction, and it was talking with Gary. It wasn't a particularly long conversation, but boy, was it awesome for me. And we got to talk first time in maybe a year at least. And that was terrific. So we're back. And tonight is that night. And about a month ago, you know, we know what happened in Israel. And that didn't astonish. Well, the savagery and the barbarism of the attacks that Hamas inflicted upon our Israeli brothers and sisters. I'm taking off my jewelry and my watch, so if I start banging around or having seizures or something, you guys won't hear a whole lot of it. Okay, back to what was happening with Israel. The savagery, the butchery, the barbarism, you know, we've all seen, you know, we know what happened. And it was devastating. It was evil. It was not an act of war. And I think to a certain extent, you know, it very easily transcended terrorism because it was acts of evil. It was what the historian Victor Davis Hanson called pre-civilizational violence. And I am inclined to agree. It bothers me because it's weird. I know this is going to sound weird. That kind of violence being visited upon innocent people bothers the living daylights out of me. It disturbs me. I mean, it really disturbs me. It almost has a physiological effect on me. But at the same time, I don't think I would have any problem doing that to the people who were guilty of this, or certainly killing them. I wouldn't have any problem killing those guys, just shooting them. You're the ones that did this. Raped those women, killed them, cut their heads up. Bam, 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 bam. I don't know what would happen in the aftermath, but I believe that's how much it bothers me. Okay, it would move me to the point of violence. And I'm not necessarily a violent guy. But it was horrible. And, you know, one of the reasons I'm just thinking about it going over my mind, and it's, you can tell that it's affecting me a little bit. But one of the things that happened almost immediately, well, two things happened almost immediately in the aftermath of this horror, of this unspeakable horror that took place. The first thing that happened And it was almost as if it were on cue. It was an absolute cascade of anti-Semitism all over the world. But what bothers me, because the Europeans have had a history of anti-Semitism, so have the Russians, so have the Jews, definitely the Muslims and the Arabs. But here, I'm talking about here, in my United States of America. No, I didn't say the United States of America. No, I said my United States of America, your United States of America, incidentally, and you should be pretty pissed off about it. It's everywhere. And it is disgusting, and it is sickening. A 68-year-old Jewish guy went out to counter protest a pro-Palestinian demonstration. Somebody hit him in the head with a megaphone. He fell to the ground, and as a result of that injury, he died. They're killing Jews in the United States. For what? For being Jews, okay? Anti-Semitism. You know what anti-Semitism means? It means that someone is a Jew-hating son of a bitch. Sorry. This is one of those things, guys. This is one of those things, man. And here we see it. When Allied forces, especially when American infantry were making their moves inside the German homeland early 1945 in January, February, March of 1945, they came across the camps. The Germans had evacuated and they had just left these people. They had just left dead bodies stacked like cordwood. They left walking skeletons. And there are a lot of reasons that Dwight Eisenhower was the man worthy of that moment. And he proved it all throughout his military career. He made the villagers, all the surrounding villages, come to the camp, see for themselves what exactly had happened. He had those same people dig the graves to bury the Jewish dead. And he also invited the news media, and he insisted that the Army Signal Corps document with film. They took movies of everything, and here's why he did it. And this is what he said. Because 50 years from now, if we don't do this, if we don't make the world aware of it, if we don't make it an open book to the public, 50 years from now, some son of a bitch is going to stand up and say it never happened. And they've tried. They've tried ever since. But the first thing we see is this avalanche, this epidemic of anti-Semitism in the United States, in my United States, in your United States. And this is another form of anti-Semitism. And it is this phrase, and you've heard it a lot on the news, and anybody who, and this is a clue, okay, this is code for you guys. Anybody who uses this phrase is not an ally of Israel. Okay? You could probably say that they are an under-the-radar, passive anti-Semite. But I have to cough and clear my throat, so I'm going to hit the mute button for a minute, but we'll be right back. And we're back. Now, this passive anti-Semitic phrase that I'm getting ready to lay on you, it's code, all right? And it's called, the phrase is proportionate response. We've all heard it. We've heard it on the news. We've heard about politicians urging Israel to, you know, make sure that they don't do anything other than a proportional response, proportionate response. October 7th, another date, which will live in infamy, an army of bloodthirsty Hamas jihadists swarmed into Israel, and they laid waste to a reported 1,400 innocent unarmed civilians, including women, children, the disabled, senior citizens. In response to this terror assault, Israel justifiably declared war on Hamas, with Israeli leader Bibi Netanyahu vowing that every single member of that terror organization is henceforth a dead man walking. And right on cue, and that's code right there, the mainstream, which means left-wing media, left-wing politician, global institutions like the farcical United Nations Security Council that are packed to the gunnels with enemies of the Western world demanded what? Number one, Israel show restraint in its response and refrain from disproportionate violence. I'm going to read that again. They demanded that Israel exhibit restraint in its response and refrain from disproportionate violence. Now, this notion, this curious notion of disproportionate response or proportionate response, either one, pops up every single time Israel is hit with a terror attack. And think about the people who are constantly making these noises. Have any of them, any one of them, ever called for Hamas to show restraint or to refrain from disproportionate violence? And that kind of begs the next couple of questions. What retaliation would be proportionate to the burning alive of families, the gang rape of female prisoners, the beheadings of babies and toddlers, the torture of old people, the kidnapping of hundreds more who are right now living in terror that their beheading will be live streamed on the internet? Would the anti-Israel left consider an acceptably proportionate response to these atrocities? Would they be satisfied if the Israeli Defense Force limited itself to a surprise invasion of Gaza, burning Palestinian families alive, raping Palestinian women, beheading Palestinian infants, torturing Palestinian grandmothers, and kidnapping hundreds of Palestinians? Because technically, that would be proportionate. Well, of course not. The same Western leftists who celebrated the atrocities committed by Hamas on October 7th would be apoplectic in fits of rage if Israel ever perpetrated a single one of these war crimes. The revulsion and the shock that these hypocrites should have felt over Israel's victims are reserved only for the oppressed, and I'm using my air fingers closer to the oppressed so-called Palestinians. Let's be real. The only response to Hamas terrorism which the left considers appropriate is for Israel to sit on its hands and submit to its own extermination. Wednesday, on MSNBC's The Last Word, to name one of the most up-to-date examples of this, host Lawrence O'Donnell, an avowed socialist and apparently anti-Semite, stated that the Israeli government in the 21st century seems to have deliberately and publicly abandoned the notion of proportionate response and is using a response that is, in effect, disproportionate by taking an approach toward Hamas that we will hit you even harder than you'd ever expect. No, 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 I am not making it up. I'm not making it up. During an interview with the New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof, who criticized Israel's military response to the October 7th attack, Lawrence O'Donnell stated, Nick, the phrase that used to frame these events in the 20th century was proportionate response. There's that word again, that phrase. Whether it be the United States, whether it be Israel responding to some kind of attack, the response was supposed to be, in theory, proportionate. Okay. Swell, Larry, according to whom? Since when is a response to sneak attacks or terrorism, and I'm using air fingers quotes again here, supposed to be proportionate? According to what theory? Proportionate response has never been an international wartime agreement or standard. 20th century rose. No one during World War II ever cautioned the Allies to limit their response to Pearl Harbor or other Axis aggression proportionately. In wartime, just like in sports, the only reasonable expectation is that each combatant is fighting to win, to batter the enemy so hard that they stop fighting and surrender or they die. Did anyone ever suggest to Mike Tyson that he pull his proportionate response to his opponent? Why on earth would a combatant hit back only hard enough to allow his opponent or his enemy to keep fighting? This notion of proportionate response is entirely bogus. It's nothing more than a fake moral demand from Israel's left-wing enemies to prevent her from defending herself. Only Israel is expected to respond proportionately to ongoing terror attacks from an organization whose commitment to eradicating the Jewish state is enshrined in its own charter. The 21st century Israeli government seems to have deliberately and publicly abandoned the notion of proportionate response into, in effect, disproportionate, saying we'll hit you even harder than you ever expect, O'Donnell continued. This seems to be the deliberate framing that they want. Yes, it is, Lawrence, you dumbass. It is the deliberate framing that Israel wants, and why wouldn't it be? Especially in the wake of the 9/11 level, October 7th attack on Israel. Israel is justified in destroying Hamas to the last man for the good not only of the civilized world, but really for the good of the Palestinians themselves, whom Hamas routinely exploits as cannon fodder. It is a terror organization that deliberately shields itself behind Palestinian noncombatants and embeds its headquarters and weapons caches in hospitals and schools precisely for the purpose of drawing Israel into the narrative trap of attacking civilian targets. The Israeli Defense Forces, for its part, make a greater effort than any fighting force in history to avoid civilian casualties. This is never acknowledged. It's never appreciated by these pompous anti-Semites in the media or in the United Nations who shrug off any number of Israeli casualties, but to treat a single Palestinian death as a tragedy of epic proportions. What was it Stalin said? One death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic. There is no negotiation or appeasement with Hamas. Ghazi Hamad of Hamas Political Bureau said on October 24th on Lebanese TV that Hamas is prepared to repeat the October 7th Al-Aqsa flood operation over and over again until Israel is destroyed. He added that Palestinians are willing to pay any price because they are proud to sacrifice martyrs, and everything we do is justified. What is the proportionate response to such relentless evil, to an entity so devoted to your annihilation that they will sacrifice any number of their own people to carry it out? If you're Israel, the only proportionate response the world finds acceptable is to sit back and welcome your own slaughter. For her sake and for the hope in the rest of the civilized world, Israel has to ignore these subversive demands and exterminate her jihadist enemies once and for all. Well, how you like them apples? I guess I can still do a little bit of radio after all. We're going to take a break right now because, quite frankly, all this talking makes a fella thirsty, and we're going to listen to a little bit of music, and then we will be back with more of a conservative perspective right after this.
A boy went back to Napoli because he missed the scenery, the native dances and the charming song. But wait a minute, something's wrong.
Mambo Italiano, hey, hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano, go, go, go. You mixed up a Siciliano. All you Calabrese do the Mambo like a crazy with a hey, Mambo. Don't wanna tarantala, hey, hey, Mambo. No more mozzarella, hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano, try an angelada with the fish, baccala, and then hey, Goomba. I love how you dance the rumba. But take some advice, paisano. Learn how to mambo. If you're gonna be a square, you ain't gonna go nowhere. Hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano. Hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano. Go, go, Joe. Shake it like a Giovanna. Hello, kiss you, did you get happy in the pizza when you mambo Italiano. You don't have to go to the school. Choose to make it with a pizza bambino. It's like a bean. Kid, you good looking, but you don't know what to cook until you hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano, hey, hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano, ho, ho, ho. You mixed up a Siciliano. Hello, kissy, did you get happy in the pizza when you Mambo Italiano.
We'll be right back. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressmen because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Could you do it? Would you do it? Seriously. Well, you know what? In a way, we already have. Because fundamentally, this is what the MAGA movement is all about. We're mad as hell. We're not going to take it anymore, man. We've had it. We already told them this once, and they obviously thought we were kidding and didn't really mean it. So now here we have to go again. As most of you know, that clip that I just played there is the extremely talented actor, Peter Finch. He's no longer with us, but that was a long time ago. That came from almost 50 years ago, 1976. The name of the movie was Network, and it was based on a story by a great writer named Paddy Chayefsky. And I'm not going to get into the, you know, the details of the backstory or anything like that, but the things that were said, okay, the guy's an anchor man. He's been with the network for decades. Walter Cronkite. Okay, basically he was Walter. You guys don't even know Walter Cronkite. He's been with the network a long time, and he's been told they're doing away with the news. They don't have a place for him anymore. He's an anchor man, but there's nothing to anchor because they're getting rid of the news. They're going to put, you know, some kind of game show or something on the evening news. So this was his last broadcast, and he just comes in. And he says, you know what? They'll have to cut the commercial and drag me out of here with security. But if this is my last show. It's my show. It's my last show. I'm going to make for real. And so he goes out and he says that you just heard, the clip there, that monologue, soliloquy, I guess. That was 1976, guys. 1976, I was 14 years old. What has changed, huh? What has changed beyond things getting crazier? Not much. Everything that he said in 1976, you or I could have said here in 2023. Yeah, hell yeah. You want to know how much crazier it's gotten? Okay. Canada, does Canada strike you as a particularly crazy place for the most part? William Shatner's a Canadian. Okay. So, you know, it's pretty laid back. But I want you to listen to what the left Fruit Loops are doing in Canada.
I
I thought I was going to tell you about what the dumb people are doing up in Canada, but apparently I didn't save it. But I can talk to you about it, all right? It's called the MAID directives, all right? The MAID Act, M-A-I-D, MAID. And, there it is, okay. And what that stands for is the Medical Assistance in Dying Law. Now, it was first put into effect back 2016, and what the law does is it allows, again with the air fingers quotes, man, I'm wearing it up. It allows people to be euthanized if they have a grievous and irremediable medical condition, such as a serious injury or disability that's put them in an advanced state of irreversible decline. Okay, this is the land of Bob and Doug McKenzie, man. Okay? Yeah, the kid's in the hall. Take off, you hoser. So, there's been a lot of talk in recent years in augmenting, I guess, the Medical Assistance in Dying Law and making it available to those with mental illness. And I know I know, but sit back, there's more. Coming up in March 2024, the Medical Assistance in Dying Act is going to be expanded to include not just the mentally ill, but people who are addicted to drugs. Substance abusers will soon have access to medically assisted dying in Trudeau. Justin. Yeah. Pierre was the old man. I don't know who Carmine Trudeau is, but just... Oh, it's been a long time, baby. But anyway, Justin Trudeau, so substance abusers are soon... Let me just read that whole... That's right. According to the... Substance abusers will soon have access to medically assisted dying in Justin Trudeau's utopia. In the United States... Best we can do is free crack pipes and syringes. But it makes sense if you stop and think about it. While we're embarking on this brave new world, this new Holocaust, let's go ahead and exterminate all the alcoholics too. I mean, if you've already okayed taking out the mentally, who makes those decisions, by the way? Who would make that decision? If you've already okayed the taking out of the mentally ill and the physically infirm, let's just go ahead and get rid of the druggies too. And there's also been much discussion. And again, I'm not making this up, guys. I'm not making it up. There's been a great deal of discussion about extending the MAID offer to the chronically depressed. And why not ixnay those with birth defects or perhaps insufficiently blonde hair and blue eyes? Yeah? No. No, it's not dead air, because I was thinking, and no, I'm not making it up. That's exactly what it is. Isn't that insane? That's crazy. Canada. Okay, Canada. Bob and Doug McKenzie, William Shatner, Philip and Terrence. Canada. What the hell, Carmine? I think that's what I'm gonna call him from now. Okay, if you guys hear me talking about Carmine Trudeau, okay. He wasn't a bootlegger that worked out of Detroit in the 1920s. He's the Prime Minister of Canada here now today, Carmine Trudeau. Anyway, What in the world is that? Okay. Our neighbors to the north. I'm going to let you form your own. You know, do I understand the concept of euthanasia? Yes. Do I embrace it? Limitedly. Extremely, extremely limited in that embrace. But you want to talk about real crazy? You want to talk about real crazy? You know, in the first half of the show, what have I got? I got about 15 minutes. I don't know if I can do it or not. We'll see what happens. In the first half of the show, we talked about the evil of what happened in Israel a month ago. And these people throughout the Muslim world, we say insane. We say they're crazy. We say they're and they are, okay? They are. This is what I'm leading up to, and nobody wants to talk about this. Nobody wants to talk about this. And I'm not sure why. Well, yeah, I am. I think I got a good idea why they don't. But we're going to talk about it, by God. We haven't talked about it in a while, but we're going to. Why is it so easy for these people to commit these acts of barbarism and terrorism, the pre-civilizational violence, as Victor David Hansen called it? Well, there's something wrong with them. Well, yeah, obviously there's something wrong with them. But nobody wants to talk about what it is and why this kind of stuff is so easy for these cats to engage in. Okay, you ready? You ready to sit up straight and clutch at your pearls and be shocked, shocked and appalled at what the captain's getting ready to talk about? Muslim inbreeding. Yes, there it is. Inbreeding is common in Islamic culture. It's been going on since Muhammad sanctioned first cousin marriages 1,400 years ago. And I guess really there's nothing like getting marriage advice handed down from one generation to the next that originated with a lunatic pedophile. PJ Media reports that because Muhammad encouraged inbreeding, many Muslims regard intermarriage as part of their religion, part and parcel of their religion. First cousin marriages are also viewed as a source of social status, as a means of keeping wealth within the family, and as a form of control. In addition, it is a vehicle to safeguard families against the influence of non-Muslim outsiders, which contributes to insular communities that do not integrate into Western society. So, 13 minutes. I don't know. We might have to go into extra innings here. I'm going to try and tell this. So, just how many Muslims are inbred? A lot. A lot. As was written in a seminal report by a Danish psychologist, Dr. Nikolaj Sennels, half of the world's Muslims are inbred as a result of consanguineous marriages. So, we're talking, and this was written in 2015, almost 10 years ago, we're talking about a billion inbred Muslims. And that number's rising. Now, it's more common among Muslims living in Islamic countries compared to those living in the West. But even those in the West, here amongst us, the numbers are shockingly high. Dr. Sennels states that more than half the Pakistanis living in the United States, in the United Kingdom, are married to first cousins. And according to an article at Bare Naked Islam, although Pakistanis account for 3% of the births in the UK, they make up 33% of children born with birth defects in the country. And in addition to increased risk of genetic disorders amongst consanguineous marriages, IQ is likewise negatively affected. Normal IQ averages probably around 100. Low intelligence is said at 85 or 90. Mild disability at 70 to 79. Moderate disability at 50 to 59 in terms of IQ points. Studies show that inbred children have an average IQ of 79. So that's mildly disabled. One study showed a 400% increased risk for inbred children having a lower IQ than 70. The normal risk for having a child in this IQ range is 1.2%. That risk jumps to 6.2% when the children are inbred. And again, this article was written in 2015, so we can imagine that these numbers have probably bumped up at least one or two. Not surprisingly, children with low IQ are far more likely to drop out of school and have limited job skills, resulting in limited prospects for employment. In addition, inbred individuals are at risk for a wide range of developmental abnormalities that result in poor social skills and lack of empathy, among other things. How are they capable of such barbaric acts? Inbred individuals are at risk for a wide range of developmental abnormalities that result in poor social skills and lack of empathy, among other things. Inbreeding also results in a significantly higher percentage of stillbirths, as well as an increased risk of mental illness, including schizophrenia and criminal insanity. All of these risks intensify as one generation after another inbreeds. It compounds genetic abnormalities. And here we are, 1,400 years in, with no end in sight. That's 50 generations of inbred Muslims. Just a moment, please. When you combine an Islamic holy book that teaches hate alongside rampant inbreeding, there is no doubt that Islamic culture is subpar, and that is putting it mildly, and further, not compatible with Western values and modernity. And yet, this intellectually, physically, and spiritually compromised population continues to advance around the globe, gaining ground with each passing day. How can that be? I don't know. For all our intellectual, spiritual, and cultural superiority, perhaps we're the fools after all. I don't know. Not dead air, I'm still here. West Virginia Democrat Senator Joe Manchin will not be seeking re-election after this after his term. 76 years old, decided that he doesn't stand a rat's ass chance in hell of securing the Democrat presidential nomination. He knows that's not going to happen. So he's out. He's had enough. He's made his pile. He's got lots of money. And my guess is he's probably going to be looking at trying to start some kind of third party or middle ground group and see what he can do there. I was, oh God. All right. Anybody know who Caster Semenya is? Any clue there? Well, Caster Semenya is an Olympic champion middle distance runner. I don't know what that means, but apparently they've got a sport for it in the Olympics, and it's the middle distance. I don't know what. Anyway, Caster Semenya claims to be a woman, despite being born without a uterus, adding that he embraces the differences he was born with. At the end of the day, Caster Semenya says, I know I am different. I don't care about the medical terms or what they tell me or my testosterone, you know, being born without a uterus, being born with testicles, those don't make me less of a woman. My testicles don't make me less of a woman. One more time. My testicles don't make me less of a woman, says Caster Semenya. Now, of course, this insane and outlandish statement went completely unchallenged after being made. No, your testicles don't make you less of a woman, Caster. As a matter of fact, they don't make you a woman at all. They make you a dude, all right? Okay. But he goes on, those are the differences I was born with. And I guess he's talking about those testicles that have nothing to do with him being a woman. I mean, that don't make him less of a woman. I'm going to embrace them. So now he's hugging his testicles. And he's not going to be ashamed of his testicles because he is different. No, you're not different. You're a dude. Okay, there are a bazillion of us around. We've all got testicles, and we oftentimes embrace them ourselves. But we know we're not chicks, man. We know we're dudes, okay? We're guys. You're a guy. The South African Olympian is classed as having differences in sexual development. What in the hell? Yeah, there are differences in sexual development because you are a dude, okay? That's what's different about you. As opposed to all the other girls that don't have testicles. So she's considered legally female. And according to the Associated Press, what do we got? We got 3 minutes. Yeah, this is nothing but crazy tonight, all-time crazy. World Athletics accepts that Semenya was legally identified as female at birth, but, well, who identified her? Ray Charles? I mean, oh, God. But says she has one of several conditions that are known as differences in sex development, where she has the typical male XY chromosome pattern because she is a guy and a testosterone level that is up in the typical range for a male. Son of a... She's a guy! For the love of God! But in embracing who Semenya is, Caster has refused to take drugs to reduce his testosterone levels since the athletic world's governing body introduced those rules in 2018. So as a result, the 32-year-old, which I guess is the only thing accurate about who the hell this person is in the article, has been barred from competing. But in July, Semenya won a lengthy legal battle against the Swiss government at the Strasbourg-based international court. So I guess, like, in the scales of justice, is there like, do they put one testicle on each side of the scale? And on Monday, the European Court of Human Rights agreed to rule on the case of Semenya. Meanwhile, Swiss authorities, with the support of the World Athletics announced that they intend to take the issue to the ECH, I don't know, somebody's grand chamber, whose rules are binding. Oh, man. Okay, Tuesday, Semenya told the BBC that he is focused on winning battles against the authorities. Oh, no, wait a minute, hold on. Whoa, stop. I'm going to read the sentence to you. You tell me what's wrong. Thanks. On Tuesday, Semenya told BBC that he is focused on winning battles against the authorities rather than competing with next year's Paris Olympics, not in her plan. Her plan. Nobody even knows what the hell's going on here. All right, that's about all the time we got. Anyway, no, your testicles don't make you less of a woman, but they make you just exactly, totally a guy. That's all the time we got, folks. I hope you had a good time. 50 seconds left. You're going to hear me here Thursday nights on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And happy to be back. Eventually, we're going video with a simulcast, but I'm going to have to get some people. You can also hear us Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Mojo 50 Radio Network with a conservative's perspective there, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be. The very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio, mojo50.com. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much for tuning in this evening. We'll see you next Thursday or Sunday, if you make it, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless.